Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo, right here for you every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. And today is Wednesday Hump Day. And boy, do we have a very special guest for you today. So don't touch that dial, because we're going to introduce you to our very special guest in just a few minutes.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because you are listening to Colombo Chronicles Live. Welcome, welcome, everyone. Welcome to the world of authors and experts. And on our first part of our show, in Authors and Experts, we'll be introducing you to a very special guest. And her name is Carolyn Howard Johnson, and she started writing what she considers her real writing career when most are thinking of retiring. And the name of her book, and it's in its third edition, is The Frugal Book Promoter, once dubbed a classic by BookBaby.com. So you won't want to miss this, especially if you are interested in publicist, journalist, marketer, editor, retailer, and tips on how to write your book and how to do it frugally. It's a series of books for writers and the many classes she taught for nearly a decade as an instructor for UCLA Extension's world-renowned writers program. And, you know, everyone has a book inside of them. Everyone is a book. I mean, every day is a new page, right? We don't know what's going to happen from minute to minute. We don't know what's going to happen day to day. And so each day we start out new, and it is a new page in our book from the day we are born and brought into the world by mommy and daddy. And that is the beginning of our experience on Earth. And so you can start your journaling as a little child and continue on throughout your life. But you may want to take some of those pages and turn it into a book or into an e-book. So think about that, because everyone has memoirs, even if it's for yourself or for your family or for your children and grandchildren to read in the future about your life. It's an important thing to do, to leave our mark in the world, whether it's on a small scale, family scale, large scale, it doesn't matter. You've left your mark. And so on that note, we're going to take a break, and then we will be back, the world of authors and experts. So stay with us and don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up, and thanks for tuning in every Wednesday to Columbo Chronicles Live. And it's good to be alive, isn't it? One more day above the ground is always a blessed and a great day. So I'm hoping you having a great day and things are getting better no matter how we are experiencing life, which is unprecedented today where people are more isolated and locked down. But I think we're going to be coming out of that. I'm thinking positive, the sun shining today, and I think more people are being able to experiencing going back to work and opening their businesses, even if it's partially or whatever. It is a beginning and a start into getting back to normal, hopefully, in the near future. But while you're in your homes, you may want to pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper and take some notes today because you have time to write. You have time to write your memoirs. You have time to write poetry and so forth. And today we have an expert with us today on authors and experts. Again, Carolyn Howard Johnson started writing what she considers her real writing career when most are thinking of retiring. Never think of retiring, though, because there's always something we need to do or wanted to do, right? So time to do it. So she took advantage of her thinking about retiring. And she brings her experience as a publicist, journalist, marketer, editor, and retailer to the advice she gives in her How to Do It Frugally, I love that, How to Do It Frugally series of books for writers and the many classes she taught for nearly one decade as an instructor for UCLA Extension's world-renowned writers program. So with a lifetime of experience before her 16 books, both self-published and from Modern History Press, what do you want to talk about? Poetry, memoirs, travel, acting, grammar, editing, bookstores, hieroglyphics, book marketing, getting reviews. Her acting, writing husband of 63 years, oh, we'll have to talk about that too, just let her know. So let's get started and let's introduce Carolyn Howard Johnson to Columbo Chronicles Live, and let's get started. Welcome, Carolyn Howard Johnson. How are you doing today? And welcome to Columbo Chronicles.
Thank you very much, Rose Columbo. It's very nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you, too. And being a writer, I'm always looking for information like other writers and ebooks and how to improve. And you are definitely a person we would want to talk to, especially since your book is a frugal book promoter. The Frugal Book Promoter, and that is interesting because, you know, Carolyn, sometimes we get caught up and we end up spending way too much money and we get no help from these publishers. So I'm so intrigued by this title and what you do. And so can we talk about maybe a memoir And what are your experiences in writing a memoir, and what advice do you give to people who want to write a memoir? Because I think that would be very difficult to do.
Actually, I think the only difficult part is getting over the idea that we may want to do it all by ourselves, as opposed to using the traditional path of getting an agent and then getting a publisher. Because as you so wisely mentioned, so many people start out without realizing that there is a big expense involved and a lot of time, regardless of whether they are traditionally published or whether they do it all themselves. And that in either case, they very well may not make the money on them that they expect to, and therefore they put money that they either wouldn't have put in otherwise or that they would prefer not to, and they never make it back. So that's what brought me to write the Frugal Book Promoter. Was my first novel was published traditionally. I ended up spending $35,000 on it in terms of PR, and the things that I did for myself based on my own past experience were what sold books for me. And I thought, oh, there have to be other authors out there with this very same problem. So I went to UCLA and pitched a class in marketing for them. It was the first they ever had had. Before, it had always been fine writing, that kind of thing. And they said yes. And then I was stuck. I had no text because all texts out there that talked about marketing didn't talk about marketing books. And although marketing is that, indeed, marketing, still marketing books has a lot to it that's different from general marketing. So I got busy and wrote a book. And that was my first, that's my flagship book. It's now in its third edition with Modern History Press.
That's amazing how people, ideas come into our heads. And then when you take action like you did, it falls into it snowballs into another career. And then you end up writing a book and teaching a class at UCLA. So that's very impressive. And I know that I read that you grew up and you were raised by Depression-era parents. What was that like, and did you find that writing helped you as a child? Did you write when you were a young child?
I didn't write when I was a young child. My mother taught me to do presentations, kind of speaking, and I took some debate classes in high school. But she read to me a lot, and my younger brother. So we were, and she was a storyteller herself. The story she told me about her own life living through the Depression ended up in a couple of my creative nonfiction. That might be a new term for some people, but it just means it's like a memoir. It's true, but it reads like a story. So yes, they were a big influence in terms of my writing, but just not in the actual writing process itself. I mean, it never occurred to me or to them that I would ever be a writer or even go to college. Life was different then. I had this little theory that a lot of times opportunity comes along and sits on our nose, and we ignore it, and we're forever sorry afterward. When something comes around and knocks on the door, it's then. You kind of go with the flow, try it, see what happens. And you were talking about memoir. It's the ideal time for that. Here we are, staying at home more. Access to all of the things that we need to get started. It's never been a better time to publish than it is right now, because some of the book bigotry has gone away. By book bigotry, I mean the idea that somehow if you self-publish that's not as good as if you're traditionally published. It still exists, but it's much less than it was in earlier decades. There are e-books. You mentioned e-books. Yes.
Right.
So, my friend Erwin Zucker, who I know you know, actually helps people with whatever they need in terms of that as well. It's just dig in, get started. There's help with organizations. There's help with books. Inexpensive help. Not the kind that you have to hire done, the kind where you learn how to do it, you get coached through it, those kinds of things. And it can be very inexpensive.
Yes, Aaron Zucker, the president and founder of Book Publishers of Southern California, has a wealth of information, and people should contact that organization to meet people like yourself so that they can find out more information and also read your book as well by ordering the book. But on top of that, I read that your husband of 63 years is an actor and a writer as well. Did he have any influence on your ideas to write and to teach?
Well, as you can imagine, after 63 years, we've had a lot of influence on one another. I got cancer in my late 60s, and he was very amenable to selling the stores that had made a very good living for us for a couple of decades, and he started acting, and he pulled me along with him, and because I was getting deeper into writing, I pulled him with me, and he is now an award-winning playwright, and he's written a wonderful book for this time and this place for immigrants, helping them adapt to life in the United States. You know, we are kind of crazy. People come to the U.S. expecting things that aren't true, or not fully understanding what they're going to get when they get here, to say the least. So it's called what foreigners need to know about America from A to Z by Lance Johnson.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
It's been published in Ukrainian and in simplified Chinese as well as English. So he's reaching out to people who need it, that's for sure.
Yeah, they keep pouring in by the millions, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, they have to go back to quotas, or we're all going to end up, you know, supporting all these poor people.
The idea is to get they're here is to get them out of that poverty, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You got to understand the culture in order to make any money.
So, you know, you wrote this book about being frugal. What are some of the ways that people can be frugal?
Well, first of all, they really need to get over the idea that marketing is beneath you if you're creative and arty and a writer, because marketing can be very, very creative, and it isn't what people think it is. They think of it as being rather commercial and kind of, I don't know, degrading is somehow to the word sell annoys them. And we need to get over that. That isn't what marketing is. Marketing is finding our audience. Marketing is finding people who need what we can give. Marketing is sharing with other people the stuff that will help them. So if we can get over that and write, we've got a second, third, first career ahead of us. Never too late or too old to start.
No, not at all.
And then once you've done that, there's just, as I mentioned before, there's just so much help. I'm really a creative writer. I think of myself that way. I write stories. I write poetry. But it's my books that have taught people how to do this, regardless of whether they are in retailing or whether they're writers in the publishing world. Teaches them how to do that marketing, and how the basic thing that I think appeals to most of them is that the very skill that you'll need the most to market your own work is what we all do, and that's write. So if you can write, you can learn what else is necessary to market and to write that memoir.
So when you self-publish versus seek out a publisher that's well-known, is it true, though, that it's much takes much longer because you have to go through the process of getting their attention and finding out exactly what they want and who's publishing what, and then that they can actually change your story.
Yes.
Because I've heard that some people don't even recognize their books afterwards.
Exactly. Well, what happened to me, that's actually sort of what got me into self-publishing, was I'd been raised to an era where that book bigotry was rampant. And we talked about my pitching UCLA to teach them to teach authors how to market. And when they said yes, I didn't have a text to work with, and it was just as ebooks were coming out. And I thought about trying to get a publisher, but you're right. It sometimes takes 2 to 3 years to find an agent. So if any of your audience out there is thinking about doing it, and say they are at retirement age or older, they may not want to give over the time it takes to do that agent publisher trek, and it might not even be the best thing for their particular title, much less their pocketbook. And then you add in that additional idea that it takes so much time. And we don't know, we could walk out in the street and get killed tomorrow, you know? So
right.
by the time we're in our retirement years, it's every year counts. We've got to grab what we can while we can, and self-publishing can help us do that.
And then when you self-publish, can they self-publish their own copyrights, the Library of Congress, and what about their rights to the book?
Yes.
Nationally, internationally, all of that.
Yes, exactly. And at a very basic level, all of that is in the Frugal Book Promoter. And then as you need more information, you get more stuff at writers' conferences. They're a heck of a lot of fun, by the way, with other books in my series. Like I have one of my favorites is How to Get Reviews, Frugally and Ethically. You can hire inexpensive help. You can belong to groups. You can get critique groups to help you. Tons of ways to do it frugally. So the help is out there. Lots of classes. I taught a class for a while at my local library. And, of course, when local libraries sponsor you, they get public funding, so they don't charge for classes and such. So check with your library. They may have something for you.
Oh, that's a great idea.
They'll sure have a lot of books.
That's for sure. And so what about you mentioned that you were an actress as well. So did your acting help you with writing your books or presenting your classes or all of it? And then the last part of that is how difficult is it to get on a show such as an Oprah show, some talk show?
Well, people who hold out the idea of being on Oprah are, my father used to say, spitting in the wind. But it's not that you can't get super, super, super lucky, but it's a little bit like winning the lottery. That doesn't mean there aren't tons of shows out there that are looking for content. I'm not going to say like yours. I'm sure you have plenty of people just coming to you begging to be with you. But there's a lot of radio folks out there and a lot of other people in producing conventions and producing writers' conferences, et cetera, that really need content, really need people to speak, really need people to teach. And to answer your question about how acting helps, in all of those ways. I mentioned I took debate classes in high school. When my husband and I sold our retail stores, we we started, he started acting. He started doing that because he was taking classes to kind of bring him out of a depression he was suffering at the time. And I kind of tagged along with him. And we both have some really fun credits behind us in commercial acting, like TV, Time Life CDs, Blue Shield. It went on and on. And it was funny. People were just, people were looking for people in our age range to be in ads because that, we boomers, I'm a little older than most boomers, but we boomers were on the edge of that. It was a demographic thing. Have you ever noticed how many ads there are for pharmaceuticals on TV lately? and they don't put 20-year-old people on them, you know. So
And I were laughing about that. I mean, everything's about everything. Your big toe ache, your little finger ache. We got a pill
for
this, a pill for that.
Yeah, and have you listened to those voiceovers about the side effects? Well, they have actors like us on the screen looking like we'll never die, you know?
And it's so funny because at the very end they say it so quickly and they go, and could cause death.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, I have a headache and it can cause death.
Yeah, right. I'm going to take this pill because of the headache, and then I'm going to get, you know,
possibly die.
Possibly die.
So
rarely occurs. They also used, for those of you who are kind of into grammar or love to write, they use a lot of passive tense. So that, you know, things just happen. It never, they don't cause it. The pill doesn't cause it. It just happens. It's a very handy tense. One of them actually says, death could happen in that voiceover. It's like, oh, okay.
I mean, if people really listen to that, they would think 3,000 times
They're looking at my husband and me walking on the beach. You know, that's what they're doing.
I know everybody looks so healthy and happy and walking into the sunset.
But in my
great.
Struggle book promoter, I have to tell you, I dedicate a whole chapter to the importance of speaking. If someone is going to publish a memoir or anything else, that's my first choice for the best extra skill to have is to be able to speak. There's so much you can do to even bring an extra income stream in, utilizing your speaking skills along with your printed book. So
that's absolutely a
great way to go. And, you know, most teachers are speakers. More people think they have that skill than they realize.
Oh, there's nothing like a great teacher or professor that can hold your attention, you know, and versus one that you just go, when is he going to stop, you know? Can I get out
of
here? I mean, there's such a difference. I mean, I had a U.S. history teacher, and she told the story of U.S. history like I never heard it before. It was so exciting. I couldn't wait to get back to that class, even after I didn't really have that much interest in that particular subject in high school. When I got to college, this professor was just so exciting. I never forgot her because she made it so exciting to me.
Yeah. I had a teacher like that in grammar. And, you know, I heard not too long ago, I heard that Tom Hanks never got much, either he didn't ever get much history or he never liked it or, you know, he felt somehow that he'd missed out on a lot. And that's one reason he does so much work that's associated somehow with history. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, I didn't like history because they made it just memorizing a bunch of dates. But I adore it now, and I travel a lot. And history, knowing a little history of a place before you leave is, you can't say too much for that idea. You know, just read a book before you go. Buy a book on Amazon and go.
And it's so much. It comes so much more alive to people when you're going to write about something historical and you actually go and see it, and then it really comes to life in your head and your mind while you're writing about it, and you appreciate it so much more, I think. So I think the travel is really good along with the writing as well if you're going to write about historical events or things that are happening. I could see why writers do go to those areas to study them, so they got it right when they're writing in the book.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of travel, right after we talked about speaking, for a while I pursued actually selling presentations on to cruise lines to help us travel inexpensively or as another income stream. So that's something else you can do with the two of them. They aren't paying presenters quite like they did at one point, but it's still something that's available to authors.
Yes, and even if you get to travel, you know that.
Yeah, even if they just give you a room on, you know, deep down in the depths of the ship somewhere, it's still a fun time.
And so you mentioned potholes. What are potholes? What do you mean by that?
Oh, well, it's getting so we all know more and more about what potholes are. They're those things in our roads. And, of course, I'm using it metaphorically.
Right.
But
right.
stuff that I never expected to find, especially because I did have a marketing background and I did have a journalism background. And even my retailing background ended up helping me a lot with presentations at alternative presentations for my books, places like little restaurants and car washes and things like that. So as I ran across these potholes, one of my books was actually primarily inspired by it, and that was the pothole where to get reviews at the major review journals, the ones that the gatekeepers use to buy books, people like librarians and bookstore acquisition people, and you know, the people that buy books in quantity, the people like the directors of writers' conferences who ask people to come in and speak, that kind of thing. They read probably a handful of 5 to 10 journals. Publishers Weekly is one of them. Library Journal is another big, huge one. But they need that information on your book before it's released. You can't wait till your book's released to do that. You have to go and name a release date 16 weeks out from the day that it actually runs off the press, and then submit your books to these places for a review. If you don't do that, you've lost an opportunity. That's a pothole. And
okay.
You know, some of the big library systems buy at least dozens and many, many times hundreds of books of a release that they want to carry in their library. Not quite so many today as they did before digital, because they do digital too, but the amount of exposure you get by having your books in the library is huge. So that's a pothole. That's a pothole. That's a biggie.
That's a biggie.
And the way,
that's a great point.
Yeah. And the way I handled that was I didn't find out until it was too late for my first book. So I figured out a way to go in the back door, and I'm going to let your readers find out what that is. There's a way around that. And once I found that way around that, I started noticing that my book was selling better and better and better. And the publisher that I had actually gave me an award for the best marketing their best marketer of the year. Everyone was knowing it all before that.
And how do you know which publisher to use, which self-publisher to use? There's so many of them out there.
I don't think you need to use any of them.
Oh,
why do you want to pay? Why do you want to pay somebody for doing something you can learn to do for yourself? I learned to do it all myself, and I didn't know anything about the web at the time. This was the early 2000s. So, you know, I could send email, and I'd had a class in how to write Word at that point. That's all I knew about the web. And even with just that, you can publish your own book. Amazon publishes them absolutely free, except it with one of their programs, they publish your book absolutely free, except for what you pay them for actual copies of your book.
Oh, wow.
And they give you your royalties, and they pay you on time.
That's amazing. I don't think most mm-hmm. people know that.
Yeah.
And what about the audio? Do you like the audiobook versus versus the paperback?
Now that's a really long story. So I'm not going to be able to pretend to be an expert on audio. My publisher just published my first book in audio as a surprise to me, believe it or not. And I've been doing this for more than two decades. I had a blind aunt who really wanted to read my novel herself. I never got that done before she died. I had a blind uncle. I have a blind grandma. And, of course, now audios are used by everyone, not just the blind. But that's my history of ignoring one of those little things that comes up and knocks on the door and whispers in your ear. I was busy. I was publishing books. I was doing them, and I was learning about e-books. I just never got around to it. But they are really, really popular, and you can do that with almost no trouble by just going to audio, and that's also, I think it's owned by Amazon, and paying them to do that. That's one of the things. It's probably best to just let somebody else do it and pay them a little bit of money to do it. So do the e-book thing first or the print book, and then do it. That just gives you another opportunity to market it again. So my new audiobook is called The Great First Impression Book Proposal. And that teaches authors how to submit to an agent or a publisher if they want to go the traditional route. And it is now available in audio. And like when I say now, I mean it's only been out a week.
Oh, very good. Congratulations.
Yeah.
We're talking.
You've got news here.
We're talking to Carolyn Howard Johnson, the author of Frugal Book Promoter. And she has some really exciting information for anyone who wants to publish their own book. But I do want to ask you, I know you are an editor, how important is it to get an editor before you publish?
It's really important to get an editor, and it's really important to get a good editor, not a proofreader. Having said that, my book, The Frugal Editor, will give authors what they need so that they can partner with their editor. And I'll tell you why. Even a lot of editors are often, I'm going to say it like as if it's a bad thing, and I don't mean it that way at all, but they're glorified grammar teachers. And when we learn grammar in high school, we learn grammar from people who knew English, and they knew English literature, but they didn't know anything about publishing. And they didn't know very much about creative writing. So they can do some really bad stuff with someone who's writing, say, a historical novel or something with any other kind of dialogue in it, because they don't know anything about that. They're used to texts, and they're used to straight books. And when they read the novels that they're used to reading, they're not paying attention to it, because it's meant not to be paid attention to. It's just meant to be a cue that someone is talking and that this is a conversation. And it works in ways that as readers, we don't know how it's working. But as writers, we need to do it right. So both of those things. Learn something about editing so when your editor tells you something that you absolutely know is wrong, you can say, no, thank you, and still understand that you can work together.
And, do you work as an editor now or not?
I do.
I mean,
I do.
You can.
And frankly, I'm an expensive editor because I do everything. And by the time they're through having me edit a book, I've taught them. I don't just make those changes for them in their book. I tell them why so that when they're through, they know all those skills for their next book and they don't have to hire an editor. Or at least they don't have to hire anything more than a proofreader. There should be a big difference in what you pay a proofreader as opposed to what you're paying a full-service editor.
Wow, that's fantastic. And so we're running out of time. So on our last question here, before it's your time to shine, why don't you tell us a story that you find interesting that you'd like to share with the audience on your best travel story? Which one would you choose?
Do you want a positive one, or do you want one that's like the trip from hell?
Let's do the trip from hell.
Okay. The trip from hell is recent. I was on a ghost ship on the Indian Ocean where no one would accept ships into port for weeks and weeks and weeks. None of us had COVID. There wasn't anyone with a fever on the ship, but no one would let us into port. It was amazing. And there were two sorts of passengers on that trip. There were the kind who knew how to make lemonade out of lemons, and they're the ones who just had to bitch about everything. So we've chose the former route. We had our computers. We had our little balcony. We sat on our balcony. I was writing my first memoir, as a matter of fact, and my husband was editing it for me. And I'd write a chapter, and he'd edit a chapter, and then they'd call us down to dinner, and they fixed our dinners just like they usually did. You know, lobster this night, food from Bali the next night. It was quite fun, and we just made do. We pulled into Sri Lanka and saw it from the ship. They wouldn't let us off the ship in order to just refuel and get supplies. And finally, we got back to the waters, the international waters of the waters that were not international, that is, of Australia, just in time to be considered their responsibility. So they finally let us dock, and we took 6 flights from Australia back home, all arranged for by Princess Cruises, and paid for.
Oh, wow. I've been on the Princess Cruises. That is so...
this was new for them, too. The ones who were complaining had some reason to complain, but they were doing the best they could, too. And they did some really neat things, like they gave us free internet. As I say, they kept us fed and happily entertained for those who wanted that kind of thing. They paid for all of our flights home. They made all the arrangements themselves. I mean, they really did a good job.
Well,
and we made friends with all the entertainers. We had so much fun on that cruise. My daughter was here at home worrying, reporting the fact that we were out there on the water with nowhere to go to our elected officials in California for fear something was happening to us.
I remember reading about the horror stories of all you poor people who were just suffering out there on the oceans.
Yeah.
If
the ship was filled with COVID, you can see that wouldn't have been so much fun, right?
Right, exactly.
But, I have great big group photographs of 600 of us on this small, it was the smallest princess ship, and they just sold it during the COVID year. But we're all out there without masks. I mean, you know, we're having
my
our
kind
picture
of play.
Taken, and, and we're shopping. You know, we're doing all the fun stuff you do on a ship.
Well, I find that I've taken probably 5 or 6 different cruise ships and different places and over the years, and I just love cruise ships. I mean, I just love them. And the one incident that happened to me was we hit a storm on the last day coming back from Alaska. Everything else was smooth sailing, beautiful. We hit this storm, and no one wanted to eat except my husband. He was the only one in the dining room eating for breakfast. And then, of course, we dock at 8 o'clock.
So did he
in the
throw
morning.
Up?
No, he didn't. The doctors were, but he wasn't. And we dock at the shore British Columbia, I think, and the longshoremen, everything's shut down in our case. Everything's shut down. We're ready to get off the ship. We dock. Everybody's ready to go. And the longshoremen said, forget it. We're going to lunch. So
wow.
we had to stay there for, like, I don't know, 4 hours with nowhere to go, actually. But like you said, you make the best of it, right?
No matter how you travel, whether it's by ship or some other way, you're in a lot better shape if you can make the best of it. And it is a joy, and it is great inspiration for writers. I always get a few poems and sometimes a whole book out of a trip. You know, on the days. You can do other stuff. You could do stuff that normally you'd keep up and do with at home if you want to.
Exactly.
Gives you a lot of freedom to do it your own way.
I agree with you. I think everything's an adventure, and you got to go with the flow, you know, and you can put it in a book if you want to, you know. It's an experience. And so, Carolyn Howard Johnson.
Yes, may I tell you about a book that was actually written about cruising and COVID. It wasn't written by me. It was written by somebody else. It's called Joy of Cruising. And he's also written one afterward about a second book about cruising during COVID. But Joy of Cruising is the name of the book. It's fun.
Oh, cool.
He just interviewed people, and you might like it as long as you're a cruising fan.
Oh, I am. I love the Norwegian. Actually, we went on their latest ship. I can't remember the name of it right now, but we went on their latest ship in 2018, thank God, before all this hit. And we went to Italy and Spain and France and along the Mediterranean. It was absolutely fantastic and beautiful. And we actually stayed late. We stayed in Italy once the ship docked for about 4 days. 3 nights and 4 days, and did a little more exploring and flew home, and it was the most beautiful trip ever. And thank God we did it before all this hit.
But we're really missing it.
Oh, yeah. God, yes. I agree. Yes. And
we've been doing a little bit of cruising and other travel via Netflix these days. It's helping a little bit.
It does. It helps a little bit. Remember that. Remember this.
yeah.
Oh, goodness. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Carolyn
Howard
Johnson, author of The Frugal Book Promoter. And I'll have to get in touch with you about editing my book.
Erwin told me that you were an author. I'd love to talk to you about
your
book. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And so now it's your time to shine. So you can tell our audience any messages you want. You can tell them how to contact you. You can tell them how to get your book. Anything you want. It's your time to shine.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't take too long because you have been a delightful host, and you really covered so much that I would have told them. But I do, of course, want them to visit my website, which is howtodoitfrugally.com, and that's easy. And then I have a blog that if they are already doing some writing or if they are readers who want to give their favorite author the gift that keeps on giving and review the book, don't just review it on Amazon. Send the review to me for my thenewbookreview.blogspot.com. And there's a tab at the top of the homepage that tells you how to submit that. So I'd love to hear from your readers that way, your audience that way too. And keep that in mind. The nicest gift you can give someone to help the publishing industry and to keep literature alive is to review their book for them.
That's fantastic. And so, can they get your book off of Amazon then? Or do they get
Absolutely.
It off your website or both?
Absolutely. No, I let Amazon do my work for me so that I have time to write.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
well,
that's one of the advices you'd get in one of my coaching sessions. Yikes, no, just write.
Well, thank you so much, Carolyn Howard Johnson, and I look forward to talking to you in the future, and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for having me, Roz. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And Carolyn Howard Johnson has left the building, and we're about to leave the building as well and go to a wonderful ad for a wonderful restaurant out in Benson, Arizona. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe and say hello to Patty. And on that note, let's enter into the world of politics just for a moment here. Did you know that poor President Biden's polls are just plummeting? And that was the latest in the news today. And I wanted to mention Bill Gates' address when he addressed 40 heads of state at the climate summit. It says the world's most powerful doctor, Bill Gates, is to be given a platform this week to address 40 heads of state at a climate summit hosted by Joe Biden, according to a Reuters report. I don't know why they said doctor. That was an interesting word they put into that sentence. Gates, also a renowned climate expert because he is selling a book about it, will be the keynote speaker at the virtual summit, which begins on Thursday and will be attended by French President Emmanuel Macron and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. This was dated April 21st, 2021, and its title is Humans Are Free. It says that he spoke about the innovation in clean energy and industries that have yet to be created. I found that very, very interesting since President Biden is attempting to shut down the energy sector along with former Secretary of State John Kerry. And that will be the loss of millions of jobs. The announcement comes as Democrats reintroduce their revamped Green New Deal, which seeks to plow hundreds of billions of dollars into so-called green initiatives in an effort to transition to a 100% carbon-free economy. That would mean fewer humans, fewer babies, fewer animals, fewer fish, fewer animals, fewer birds. Period. So the announcement comes as Democrats reintroduce the revamped Green New Deal, which seeks to plow hundreds of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. Where are these hundreds of billions of dollars coming from since America has been locked down? This is the third year we're into, the third year of being locked down. It began in January of 2019, continued to 2020, and now has continued into 2021. And so this is very interesting that this flu has been criminalized along with the mask wearing long term, because according to the 1918 historical information that I researched, wearing masks long time, according to their health department, did not stop a virus, but it did cause bacterial pneumonia, and that most people in 1918 did not die of the flu. They actually died of bacterial pneumonia, tuberculosis, poverty, lack of nutrition because of the poverty and because of freezing weather that killed off the crops and then froze people to death as well because they didn't have electricity and plumbing in those rural areas, as well as they didn't have as many hospitals as we do today in modern and developed nations like America, or as many doctors on every corner, clinics, etc., and hospitals and emergency rooms and medications and high-tech hospital equipment. And they found, according to what I read and researched, that oxygen and ventilation and breathing in fresh air and good nutrition and warm water, hot water, clean water, were all contributing to restoring the health of the people. So they actually died from bacterial pneumonia, which was caused, according to the health department, by wearing masks long term. And today, according to the Dental Association, can cause gum disease and loss of teeth and bad breath and death from gum disease that spreads into the rest of the body. I find this all very, very intriguing and interesting compared to what is happening today with everyone running around wearing a mask when, according to the scientists, the droplets are so tiny that they can escape any mask except for the doctor's mask. And doctors don't wear masks permanently in the past, even if they were in an ICU with contagious diseases and viruses. They wore them so that they didn't cough or spit or sneeze on the patient. Critics have warned that it will collapse an already stretched economy while handling government total control over all aspects of society. So they're planning on ushering in a dictatorship, an authoritarian, totalitarian government, which would be the New World Order, in my opinion, or the One World Government, in my opinion, just like they have in China under the CCP, where they read people's thoughts, then where people are given points for their behavior, their thoughts, their words, and so forth, and they are graded like a credit card, where you're graded on credit rating. They're rated, and people have to carry this around, and they can't buy or sell. They can't move, they can't travel, they can't do anything without this rating, which leads back to the vaccine passport, which is the beginning of this merit card or merit phone, iPhone, AI, artificial intelligence. So I think people better be very aware in America that the intent is to destroy the Constitution of the United States, overthrow the Constitution of the United States by allowing Wall Street billionaires and banksters to control the world's money through digital means, artificial intelligence, which is Wall Street, and possible government people involved, EU and many others, blue states in particular, who are continuing the lockdowns by criminalizing the flu and a mask. And as I said, there are published reports that wearing masks long-term killed more people than the flu because it caused bacterial pneumonia, and that the Dental Association says it causes gum disease and loss of teeth and can cause death as well, through the gum disease that spreads through the body. And because you're cutting off your oxygen supply. God gave us a nose and a mouth to breathe in fresh air and release carbon monoxide into the environment, back into the environment, to keep us healthy, keep our immune system healthy. We need fresh air and aka oxygen to keep our cells healthy, to keep our brain healthy, to keep our lungs and our heart healthy, to keep our body, our immune system healthy. You need ventilation, fresh air, oxygen, which is what they found in the during the 1918 and after the 1918 Spanish flu. You can read my blogs at Rose for Justice, that's the number four, roseforjustice.com. And hope you find them intriguing, interesting, empowering, and enlightening so that you will do your own homework and your own research and come to your own conclusions. God bless you. God bless America. And may God keep his hand on America and keep us free and keep the Constitution preserved along with the Bill of Rights, and your right to choose, and your right to freedom, which was granted to you at birth, not by men, not by women, not by Bill Gates, not by Dr. Fauci, not by governors, not by AGs, not by the Department of Justice, not by the President of the United States, whoever it may be, not by Congress, and not by senators. It was granted to you by the God of the universe, the God of the Bible, and you need to maintain it and preserve it for yourselves, your families, America, and future generations.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.